Welcome to the Sufi Reverberations podcast, where each week, God willing, you will be able to hear a poem, a story, a meditation, and a musical interlude that give expression to one Sufi's perspective concerning the mystical dimension of Islam. My name is Anab Whitehouse, and I will be your host. Although I am not a sheikh, nonetheless, I did have the opportunity to spend 16 years in the company of a Sufi saint of the 20th century, and by the grace of God, was able to gain a few insights into the nature of the Sufi mystical path through that association. So, without further delay, let's proceed to the essential contents of this episode. Today's selection of Sufi poetry is from the Mathnawi of Maulana Jalaluddin Muhammad Rumi, edited and abridged by E. H. Winfield. The excerpt is entitled, Love Puts Reason to Silence. Love is a perfect muzzle of evil suggestions. Without love, whoever succeeded in stopping them? Be a lover and seek that fair beauty. Hunt for that waterfowl in every stream. How can you get water from that which cuts it off? How gain understanding from what destroys understanding? Apart from principles of reason are other principles of light and great price to be gained by love of God. Besides this reason of yours, God has other reasons which will procure for you heavenly nourishment. By your carnal reason you may procure earthly food. By God-given reason you may mount the heavens. When, to win enduring love of God, you sacrifice reason, God gives you a tenfold recompense, yea, 700-fold. When those Egyptian women sacrificed their reason, they penetrated the mansion of Joseph's love. The cupbearer of life bore away their reason. They were filled with wisdom of the world without end. Joseph's beauty was only an offshoot of God's beauty. Be lost, then, in God's beauty more than those women. Love of God cuts short reasonings, O beloved, for it is a present refuge from perplexities. Through love, bewilderment befalls the power of speech. It no longer dares to utter what passes, for if it sets forth an answer, it fears greatly that its secret treasure may escape its lips. Therefore it closes lips from saying good or bad, so that its treasure may not escape it. In like manner, the prophet's companions tell us, when the prophet used to tell us deep sayings, that chosen one, while scattering pearls of speech, would bid us preserve perfect quiet and silence. So when the mighty phoenix hovers over your head, causing your soul to tremble at the motion of its wings, you venture not to stir from your place, lest that bird of good fortune should take wing. You hold your breath and repress your coughs, so as not to scare the phoenix into flying away. And if one say a word to you, whether good or bad, you place finger on lip as much as to say, be silent. That phoenix is bewilderment. It makes you silent. The kettle is silent, though it is boiling all the while. The following short story is called Dream On. The time had come for a spiritual guide to begin to instruct one of his students about the intricacies of dream interpretation. In time, the student was destined to become a great mystical teacher, but before her destiny would be realized, the student had to be trained in a variety of disciplines, and today marked the occasion when this student would start to learn about dreams. Her guide had decided that the best way to begin the process would be to permit his trainee to sit in on a few sessions during which dream interpretation took place. This would enable the student to see firsthand how the guide did things, and as well offer opportunities for the student to ask questions about whatever might transpire on such occasions. Normally, people came to the guide with their dreams at different times of the week according to whenever their dreams might have occurred. However, in order to accommodate the schedule of his student, he issued a special announcement to the community in which he lived, indicating that for the next 2 weeks only, the usual routine concerning the reporting of dreams to the guide would be suspended, and people should relate whatever dreams they might have had during the week at a time on the next several Fridays, which was convenient to them. The first Friday of the new arrangement arrived, and three people were sitting in the lobby of the center, awaiting their turn to tell their dreams to the spiritual guide. The teacher and his trainee received these people one at a time, in a relatively small room near the back of the center and away from the lobby. The first person to present a dream was a woman. She obviously was very nervous, and while she wanted her dream interpreted, she also seemed to be embarrassed about the whole process. The woman started to talk about her dream several times, but stopped each instant. As she did this, she would alternate between shyly looking at the guide out of the corner of her eye and staring down at the floor as she played with her purse. The teacher gently encouraged her by saying, "Sometimes, because dreams are cobbled together in a symbolic language which combines elements of both the material world and the non-material realms, the form of the symbols that give expression to the dream may, on the surface, suggest one thing, when in reality the meaning of the dream is quite something else. So, if you find the surface form of your dream somewhat embarrassing, don't worry, because the symbols used there may not mean what you think they do." The words of the spiritual guide appeared to relieve the woman. She hesitated only a brief moment before telling her dream. She said there were parts of the dream which she had since forgotten, but the portion that remained with her was this. She had seen herself engaged in an intimate embrace with the spiritual guide, and they were passionately kissing one another. She added, "I find the dream very embarrassing, and it has been bothering me all week, for I really don't think about you in such terms, but nonetheless, this is a dream, and I am hoping you can help me determine if it means there is some kind of spiritual problem going on within me." The guide's eyes twinkled. He laughed in a gentle way and responded with, "I can well imagine why the dream's form might cause you discomfort, but in point of fact, your dream is a wonderful sign. The dream informs us that you are both embracing and in the embrace of the spiritual path. Moreover, you are being lovingly looked after in a very intense way by some of the great saints of our mystical tradition." The teacher and the one who had just related her dream talked a bit longer about different facets of the mystical way. After a few moments, she asked the teacher's permission to leave, thanked him for his kind words, and following a few words of farewell from the guide, she left. Approximately 5 minutes later, another woman appeared at the entrance to the room and proceeded through the doorway when beckoned forward by the teacher. She sat down near the spiritual guide, and as she was taking her seat, she was looking at the trainee. Over the next 30 seconds, she quickly glanced at the trainee a few more times before returning her attention to the guide. The trainee's presence seemed to unsettle her a little. Noting this, the teacher nodded towards his trainee and said, "I have complete confidence in my companion's integrity and capacity to be discreet with respect to anything she may witness here. I have asked her to sit in on some of these sessions so that she may learn about the interpretation of dreams, and in time, she will be taking over some of my responsibilities in this area." He was silent for a few seconds and then added, "If you would rather tell your dream to only me, then we could, I'm sure, find another time that works for both of us. It's entirely up to you." The woman mulled over the teacher's words for a moment and said, "No, in the light of what you have said, I don't mind her being here. I was just sort of surprised to see her when I came in, and the unexpectedness of it kind of unnerved me a bit." The teacher nodded his head in a manner that indicated he understood. He waited for her to begin relating her dream. She looked at the teacher and smiled in a very charming way. The woman seemed quite excited as she worked her way towards articulating her thoughts. "Well," she began, "my dream is about you. I sensed there was more to the dream than I will say, but since the other parts are so vague, I'll just stick to what seemed to be the main theme in the dream. She smiled that charming smile again and continued, "You and I were locked in a very intimate embrace, and we were passionately kissing one another." When it was clear the woman had said all she was able to about the dream, the spiritual guide said, "Sometimes in our dreams, there are different things which become entangled with one another, and as a result, there is a potential for confusion to arise within us in relation to such dreams." The teacher expanded on his initial commentary. "For example, sometimes we project our own desires or passions onto a situation, and these desires obscure the real significance of the dream. In order to be receptive to the true meaning of a dream's message, we first may have to take charge of our own lower nature, that is, we may have to go through a process of purification, so that we become masters of our passions, rather than have our passions be our masters. In short, we must seek to learn how to embrace the truth, rather than embrace our desires and passions." The teacher looked at the woman, smiled, and said, "If you will reflect on what I have said, I believe you may come to understand the nature of your dream. I have given you a sufficient number of indications to help you, and along with a little reflection, you should be able to derive benefit from what your dream is telling you." The guide then requested the woman's help. "If you don't mind, would you tell the other people who are waiting to see me that there are a few things which I have to do before I will be ready to receive anyone else? I'll send out word shortly to let those waiting know when they may start coming in again." The woman agreed to the teacher's request. He thanked her for her assistance, and she left. When the door closed behind the woman, the teacher turned to his trainee and asked, "Do you have any questions so far?" The trainee nodded and said, "These two women both seem to have exactly the same dream, and yet the interpretations they were given were almost completely opposite from one another. How does one know which meaning to give to which individual?" The teacher moved his head in a manner that suggested he was saying, "Yes, this is the problem." He elaborated by indicating, "There are at least three dimensions to every instance of dream interpretation. First, there is the language of dreams, which, on the one hand, involves symbols that combine elements of both the material and spiritual world, and on the other hand, convey a spiritual communication between the individual having the dream and the one who is arranging and structuring the message which is being conveyed to the individual through the dream." The guide paused briefly and then said, "A second dimension of the dream revolves about the spiritual condition of the person who is having the dream. And finally, a third element arises out of the spiritual condition of the person who is providing the interpretation of a dream." "As you indicated, the two women who came here did have exactly the same dream, at least as far as the outer form of the dream is concerned. The first woman is very sincere about the mystical path, and as well, she has been working very hard to devote herself to this way. Her dream was meant to convey to her that her sincere efforts are being rewarded, and consequently she was receiving many spiritual blessings through the loving gaze of some of the great mentors of this path. However, the second woman has not yet settled down to commit herself to the path. As a result, she is embracing this path primarily through her lower, base emotions, and in the process, she is conflating physical desires and spiritual love. Thus, the same sort of dream can mean a great many things, depending on who the dreamer is and what that person's spiritual condition is at the time of the dream. There is no compendium of dreams which can be consulted that will be able to inform one what any given dream symbol means, because a symbol without a context is meaningless, and the spiritual condition of the dreamer is what provides the necessary context to lend meaning to a dream symbol." Spiritual trainee was listening intently to a teacher as he was talking about the nature of dreams. When he seemed to have come to the end of his comments, she asked, "You earlier had mentioned a third facet of dream interpretation, namely the spiritual condition of the one who is providing the interpretation of a dream. How does that fit in?" Yes, said her guide. This is extremely important, and sometimes, unfortunately, it can lead to tragedy when in the hands, so to speak, of the wrong person. He shook his head slightly. I recall when I was being trained by my spiritual mentor, just as you are now being trained by me. My teacher told me about a friend of his who had become interested in dreams and their meanings. There had been a spiritual guide to whom this friend of my teacher would go whenever the friend had dreams. But on one occasion, the friend had become ill. Not only was he unable to leave his house, but apparently there also was something wrong with his phone. However, because he had had a powerful dream of some sort, he wanted to know its meaning as quickly as possible. So he told his dream to a neighbor of his and asked the individual to communicate the dream to the spiritual guide to whom the friend of my teacher used to go. Now, this neighbor has a somewhat silly personality, and while on his way to relate the dream as he had been requested to do by the spiritual guide of my teacher's friend, the neighbor met an acquaintance, and at some point the neighbor told his acquaintance about the mission he was on. With a little prodding from his acquaintance, the neighbor of my teacher's friend described the dream just as it had been related to him. Upon hearing the dream, the acquaintance provided some interpretation or other. Shortly thereafter, the neighbor and his acquaintance parted company, and the neighbor proceeded to fulfill the task which he originally had been requested to do. When he reached the house of the spiritual guide to whom he had been sent, the neighbor explained why he was there to the individual who came to the door. The spiritual guide, who had been the one to receive the neighbor at the door, agreed to listen to the dream. When the description had been given, the teacher asked the man if there was someone else who had already given an interpretation of the dream. The neighbor said that, in fact, someone had given an interpretation. Upon hearing this, the teacher shook his head back and forth with a sad expression on his face. The teacher informed the man that since someone else already had interpreted the dream, whatever benefit might have been inherent in the dream would be limited and shaped by the spiritual condition of the person who did the interpreting. And furthermore, the teacher feared that since the person who had provided the interpretation was not even involved with mysticism, a great disservice had been done to the teacher's friend because the latter had been robbed, in a sense, at least temporarily and possibly permanently, of the blessings for which the dream had been intended as a harbinger. The spiritual guide, who had been telling the story about his own mentor's friend, became silent, as if lost in thought. Eventually he said, "Today, the whole idea of dream interpretation has become something of an industry, as if anyone, irrespective of spiritual condition, is competent to provide proper interpretation of dreams. More damage is done than people know by the manner in which ignorance of one kind or another obscures and distorts the purpose of dreams, as well as their language, their source, their meaning, and their value." The mystical mentor again became quiet. A moment later, he broke the silence with, "I also remember someone else about whom my teacher told me. This individual had a deep-rooted desire to be a spiritual guide, but apparently this kind of service was not in that person's destiny, and therefore she was never authorized by her teacher to give spiritual instruction to people who wished to step onto the mystical path. At some point, this woman's teacher died, and, as is human nature, often is inclined to do, the woman's desires to be a spiritual teacher were manifested in a dream, which on the surface suggested she should immediately assume the duties of a spiritual guide, including the initiation of those who were seeking entry into the mystical way. When she reported the dream to my teacher, she was told, 'Since you received your authorization in a dream, perhaps you should refrain from being a spiritual guide anywhere but in your dreams.'" This week's musical interlude is entitled Sierra's Lullaby. The past is just a memory, and the future is but a possibility. How imperceptibly the present fades into what will never be again, as it becomes immersed in the mists of not yet realized possibilities. You are listening to the transitory, fleeting, perishable, fragment-filled remnants of the Sufi Reverberations podcast. Today's meditative essay is catalysis. Catalysis is a process affecting the speed at which a chemical reaction takes place. This is accomplished by introducing an agent into a reaction system that is capable of either speeding up or retarding the rate at which such a reaction proceeds. In those circumstances when a catalytic agent speeds up the reaction process, the agent is known as a positive catalyst. Agents which impede the reaction rate of a given system are referred to as negative catalysts. In some instances, a reaction will proceed in the absence of the right kind of catalyst. However, the reaction will do so only very, very slowly. In other cases, a reaction will not proceed at all in the absence of an appropriate kind of catalyst. Not all catalytic agents perform their function in the same way. Some agents have the ability to bring various components of a reaction into closer proximity than would be possible in the absence of that agent, thus speeding up the rate of reaction of those components. Other catalytic agents have the means of increasing the surface area necessary for certain reactions to take place. With more surface area available for interaction, the reaction proceeds more quickly than would be the case under non-catalytic circumstances. Still, other kinds of catalysts speed up or slow down reactions by changing the conformational and/or ionic character of the components of a reaction. This is especially true in the biochemical reaction of living systems. Some catalytic agents have the capacity to lower or raise the level of energy necessary for a given kind of reaction to occur. Thus, for example, when the energy of activation for a reaction is lowered by introducing the appropriate kind of catalyst, the reaction can proceed much more quickly with the same amount of energy in the system than would be the case normally. Some catalytic agents retard the rate of reaction by becoming competitors with one or more of the components involved in a reaction. When such catalysts occupy surface areas or membrane sites and thereby make them unavailable for components necessary for a given reaction, this competitive inhibition, as it is known, slows down the rate at which the reaction proceeds. There are many other modalities of catalysis. However, the few which have been mentioned are enough for present purposes. According to masters of the Sufi path, spiritual development or progress, especially in the mystical sense, either will not take place without catalytic assistance, or it will do so only at an exceedingly slow rate. In fact, to the extent spiritual progress does occur at all in the absence of the appropriate catalytic agents, it nonetheless will be incapable of permitting the individual to make much headway towards the ultimate purpose of spiritual growth, which is the realization of the true self. Mysticism is not an endeavor in which an individual working entirely independently can succeed. The mystical heights cannot be scaled through sheer brilliance, talent, or determination. There are no solitary ascents of the mystical path. Support and assistance and catalytic additives are all necessary for anyone who seeks to reach the top. Sufi masters do admit that not all people have the same spiritual capacity. Like gifts of intelligence, artistic talent, beauty, athletic ability, and so on, spiritual potential is not distributed equally. These differences in spiritual potential may affect the speed with which spiritual development proceeds. On the other hand, spiritual capacity is not the only factor affecting the rate of progress. In fact, someone who has less spiritual potential than another individual might not only develop more quickly than the gifted person, but actually travel further on the path than her or his more gifted companion. Qualities of sincerity, perseverance, desire, and effort also affect whether and at what rate spiritual growth takes place. The sine qua non of catalytic agents is God's grace. Absolutely nothing takes place without the presence of that support and assistance. One could say every modality of help, support, assistance, protection, and catalysis, both positive as well as negative, one encounters on the Sufi path is an expression of God's grace. Differences in the form of character of the locus through which the grace comes does not alter the underlying reality of grace standing behind such variable manifestations. Notwithstanding the foregoing comments, spiritual catalytic agents come in different varieties. Prayer, fasting, chanting, charitable acts, spiritual etiquette, night vigils, contemplation, meditation, and reading sacred texts each in its own way, all of them both give expression to God's grace as well as serve as a means to open one up to more grace. Each of the above-mentioned practices or observances has unique spiritual benefits and effects. The Sufi master is one who, by the grace of God, knows what the spiritual aspirant requires at any given time in the way of practices. Since we all have different spiritual capacities and potentials, some spiritual catalytic agents may be more effective forms of assistance to some of us than others among us. Furthermore, the package of practices may change in character during the course of the spiritual journey, as our catalytic needs change during that journey. For example, at certain stages of the path, the teacher may indicate to the student that invoking a certain name or attribute of God may be especially beneficial for that individual. At another stage, another name or attribute of God may be given for invocation. At one stage, the spiritual guide may recommend the individual become busy with charitable works. At another stage, more emphasis may be given by the teacher to concentrating on the inculcation of spiritual etiquette in the aspirant. The general package of practices and observances stays roughly the same. However, the combinations and focal concerns involving this general package may shift during the journey, from stage to stage for a given person, as well as from individual to individual. In all of this, the Sufi master is somewhat like a spiritual chemist, who has expertise in, among other things, the use and effects of different spiritual catalytic agents. Using one of these catalytic agents may help alter the spiritual orientation of the individual's heart in a certain way. Use of another catalyst may help retard the rational mind's interference in spiritual matters. Use of another agent may have a catalytic property of opening the individual up to various spiritual experiences. This may have the effect of increasing the spiritual, quote-unquote, surface area available for certain kinds of reactions to proceed. Still other catalysts, in the form of specific spiritual practices, may have an effect comparable to a lowering of the energy of activation necessary for a particular spiritual process to proceed. Alternatively, use of a given catalytic medium may provide the individual with the enabling power needed to overcome normal obstacles standing in the way of making spiritual progress on some aspect of the path. Some spiritual catalysts may help change the shape and character of one's understanding. Other spiritual catalytic agents may give expression to a form of competitive inhibition by preoccupying the individual with, say, the remembrance of God, and as a result, helping to prevent the world or the ego from gaining access to sites of attachment within consciousness or one's heart. The primary form of catalytic agent is the spiritual guide or master. Practices of one sort or another all have their value and their special catalytic properties. However, one could be engaged in such practices from now until the end of time, without any significant essential spiritual benefit manifesting itself, as long as one did so in isolation from a spiritual teacher. All of the Sufi masters are in agreement on this point. The teacher is, in a sense, the straw that stirs the drink. Or perhaps more appropriately, the teacher is the one who has responsibility for ensuring that all the right catalytic ingredients and reactants get into the drink in the right proportions and in the correct sequence and at the most efficacious time. God, of course, provides the drink, the straw, the tavern, the drinkers, the entertainment, the trained staff, and everything else which is necessary for the reactants to be able to come together to have the desired spiritual results. The teacher is the one who is looking after things on behalf of the tavern's proprietor. The teacher is the one who, by God's grace, becomes the locus of catalytic manifestation through which things are brought together in the Sufi tavern in an organized and effective manner. You have been listening to the Sufi Reverberations podcast. I hope you will join me next week for a new episode of this program. May peace be your companion.